Hello, this is the Love Letter Squad. I'm Teresa Ayers.
And I'm Janet Gallen.
And we welcome you to
Love Letters Live, a show about love letters and the stories that lead to them and the people who have them to write and people who deserve to get them. So I'm just going to go right to our guest today, Tamim Ansari, who is the author of West of Kabul, East of New York.
Which is a fabulous book.
Yes, it is. I understand. I'm looking forward to reading it myself. And that's out. And then coming in May is Destiny Disrupted, History of the World Through Islamic Eyes. Tamim is, of course, a writer, and he lectures about Afghanistan, Islamic history, democracy, the art of the memoir, which is an important thing and an important aspect of love letters, because what are they after all? Learning and schooling, the writing process itself, and other issues as they grab his imagination. He also directs the San Francisco Writers Workshop, which is the oldest continuous free writers workshop in America, and now the hub of a growing community of Bay Area writers. And I want to give you Tamim's website so that while you're listening, you can decide to just take a look at it for what is on it, of course, and to come to his book signings in May for his new book. So that's mirtamimansari.com. That's mirtamimansari.com.
Thank you.
I'm going to go right to you.
All right.
Talk about your book and your life. And
I'm going to launch into it this way. I'm going to say when you guys asked me to come on here and talk about love letters, I immediately thought about something that happened to me about 1999 or so. Now, I'm going to say that the love of my life is my wife, Deborah Krant. It's one of those things where no matter what else I may have done right or wrong in my life, I can feel pretty good about I had this relationship, and this is like, okay, so everything else is redeemed.
Okay, I am so happy you said that, because we say a lot, loving another person with all your heart and soul is your success. It is an ability, it's a talent, and it should be real high on your resume. Yes, I'm so glad you said that.
All right, so it's high on my resume. It's it's my great achievement of my life to have been in this relationship. And believe me, it's not a credit to me. It's a credit to her. So I'll put that out there. Now I will also say that I am a one and only kind of guy, and I've fallen in love more than once. And I had some intense and tumultuous relationships when I was young, in my 20s. When I was a young Afghan in America, becoming an American, you know.
Now, what was that like? That's an interesting transition, the way you say it.
Well, it was a difficult and painful transition, and I think I'm only now beginning to look back and see that that transition was part of all the painfulness and difficulty, because at the time, I experienced it as the pain and difficulty of not being able to form the relationship that I wanted. And so I certainly, when I was in college, I fell catastrophically in love. You may have heard Jane Austen quotation where she said, preserve yourself from a first love and you need never fear a second. So that was and she left and went off to another college, and it was I suffered for 2 years.
Oh.
And suffered to
plenty.
to the suicidal edge.
So
it was really and for many years I brooded about that and wondered how to get over it and things of that nature. And I was a counterculture guy at that point, and part of this community of counterculture people in Portland, Oregon. And I got together with this other woman, and we had a 2 year, 3 year, 4 year relationship. It's hard to say exactly when it really ended, but that also was like, oh, we loved each other dearly. We were best friends, but somehow just there was always something.
Not every relationship is right for a lifetime.
Not every relationship is right for a lifetime. And so now I'm going to jump forward to like 1999 or something, and I'm married, I have two kids, and I'm heading back to Portland. And both of these women, I've known them, continued to know them all my life. I think they're wonderful people. The fact that we couldn't form a relationship didn't mean anything about who they were.
Oh, so glad you said that too. Yes.
So, you know, knowing that I was going to see this first woman, Lisa, I was anticipating it and wondering about it. And I was also going to see the second woman, Taya. And it struck me just before I left on my trip that, you know, I didn't have any particular thoughts about that. Mm-hmm. And I said to myself, it's because we workshopped our relationship to such a degree that we must have just examined every corner of it. And so I guess that whatever there is in there, that's been exhausted.
But okay? So you're saying there may be nothing left to say?
There may be nothing left to say or feel. I've examined all the feelings about it. That's what I thought. Okay, so I went up to Portland, and she was there, and I ran into her. And we were at the house of mutual friends, and at some point there she said, incidentally, I'm clearing out all the kind of the trash in my house, or sort of lightening the load of my life. And the letters you wrote to me are there, and I'm never going to do anything with them. But I know you're obsessed with memoir and stuff. Maybe you want them. So I said, yeah, sure. You know, so she gave me this box of stuff, and I tossed it in the back of my car. And I didn't really think about it because, we were always in each other's houses, and it was like, what letters? We were never in different cities. So what could there be? And I figured there isn't much there. So a few nights later, I'm in my Afghan cousin's house, and it's late at night. And I finished my book, and there are no books in this house. There's nothing to read.
Oh, good.
And I'm like, oh, man, I need something to read. Hey, what about those letters? I'll go get those letters. So I went and got the letters, and I opened these letters, and there's a surprising number of them. And I started to read the first one, and I had that feeling that, if I can say this, back in the old days, as a counterculture guy, I took acid, and sometimes you took too much.
Oh, and that's what it felt like.
It felt like, this is dangerous. What is this emotion coming up? And I realized that somehow these letters had opened up something.
Oh, yes.
That was much more than I had anticipated. And I will say this. Later I went to see Lisa, the first one, and she said, she gave you her letters? Hey, I've got all your letters, too. Here, take my...
Okay, so, you know, every once in a while, I'm on the verge of tears here.
Yeah.
Every once in a while, I look at Teresa and say, we could retire and just give it to you. Everything you're saying, I think, is so important for letters. First of all, people don't throw them away. They're a gift. These letters to Lisa, that was a gift, a series of gifts you gave to her.
Mm-hmm.
She didn't throw them away, even though the relationship was over and it was tumultuous and painful. She didn't throw the letters away.
She didn't throw the letters
away. Nobody does. And wouldn't have, but she saw a way to make them double a gift by giving them back to you.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And they are the truth about how you felt. Your feelings for her aren't the same. But those letters are as true the day you wrote them because they're the truth about how you felt then. And that's the lesson, isn't it?
Could you recognize yourself in these letters?
This was the thing. The letters that I wrote to the second woman, when I read those letters, it was like, oh, this is me.
You knew that or you were surprised?
I was surprised.
Uh-huh.
I suddenly felt like I was looking over my own shoulder.
Yes.
Listening to myself, and I could recognize myself not realizing anyone was listening to me, you know, back in 20 years earlier.
Yeah.
And it was, and so what I realized then was that my idea about this relationship had been completely wrong when I headed up to Portland. It wasn't exhausted. What happened is we just couldn't work it out.
Mm-hmm.
And at some point I just said, I'm in flight. I'm leaving. And I shut the door, put it all in a concrete box, threw it in the ocean, and never looked at it again. And so the emotions that were the last emotions I felt about it were as fresh 20 years later as the day they were born.
Yes.
You know, so then I went through the emotional, reconciliation or resolving the emotions of all of that. And I couldn't have done it in the original instance because I just didn't have the strength.
Mm-hmm.
Now, 20 years later, because I have so much more to my life, and I, in fact, am with the love of my life, finally I can deal with these things.
And with a gratitude that you were released from these other two relationships so that you can have what you have now?
Yeah, I mean, it didn't...
Looking back.
I should say that I had what I had now, released or unreleased. You know, it wasn't like I was hung up on anything.
No, no, but if you had made a different decision when you were 22
mm-hmm.
to marry somebody else,
yeah.
then you may not have what you have now.
Yeah.
And, or you may.
And, well, you know, I would not have had, because what I was able to realize now many years later is that with Taya, we were not who we were going to become.
Right.
And so we were trying to stay together, but we were also trying to become who we were. And we hadn't resolved that for ourselves, each of us. You know, she grew into somebody and I grew into somebody. And meeting her now, even appreciating what a great person she is, I realized that now we would never get together.
Oh, yes, of course.
You know, so this is what brings me to the real thing that I want to say here.
Go ahead.
I have thought a lot about falling in love
mm-hmm.
and what that is. And I look back at the falling in loves of my youth.
mm-hmm.
And I think about, you know, Lisa, my girlfriend in college, and how intense that was and how suicidal I got. And that falling in love was like being hit by a bolt of lightning. And I go in the forest sometimes and I see these trees that have been hit by a bolt of lightning and it's like charred.
They're
a
mess.
They're a mess. And then way up in the top you can see they're growing some new leaves. So I felt like that was the result of that falling in love.
Oh, wonderful.
It was intense,
mm-hmm.
but it was like the singleness of experience. And when I got together with Taya, it was a recognition that being in love is a friendship. As well as whatever else, but it's got that basis. And the only thing was, we just weren't fixed to be with each other.
Sure.
You know, it's like sometimes you're not going to be together. Even it's not anybody's fault.
That's
it's
right.
It's not there's anything wrong with either of you. It's just this is not the one.
That's right.
And it's not like there is a single the one, but there is. Such a thing as not the one.
Okay, well said, yes.
All right.
But, you know, I like what you say about it's nobody's fault. Two really good people can still not be right for each other.
Right. And, you know, the issue with us, with me and Taya, was trying to grow and yet trying to hold on to the relationship. And it was like the deal we were trying to make with each other is, okay, you're free to grow, but do not grow in any way that will jeopardize the relationship. And it's like, well... you can't plan that. You can't think about it beforehand. You
right.
can't. So now this brings me to my point and my love letter.
Go ahead.
Okay. When I got together with Debbie, and you haven't read my book, but you have, so you know that we were roommates and friends for, you know, several years before we got together.
Mm-hmm.
And in fact, while we were together, we each had other relationships, and we became confidants of each other and talking about that. By the time that we got together, we had a really extensive relationship, and so that falling in love was not a sudden, blinding, lightning bolt of an experience.
Mm-hmm.
I compare it more to arriving in a new world. You know, it's like you set foot, and then there's much more, and then there's so much stuff you don't know, and then there's a forest, and there's the sky, and there's the mountains, You know, yes, I fell in love with Debbie, and I remember how it was when we first fell in love back in, you know, whatever it was, 79 and
mm-hmm.
early 80s and so on, and we were young, and, you know, being in love was all about going to romantic spots and going out and being
mm-hmm.
all of that stuff. But we both changed over the years, and I think the quality of love if you're really in love, you don't fall in love once. You fall in love again and again.
Yes.
Because you change, and as you change, you go, wow.
You're saying you fall in love with the same person again and again
yeah.
with each new...
This new you is great. I didn't know you had it in you.
Uh-huh.
You know, it's like falling in love with my wife as the mother of my children when they came along.
How old are they now?
Well, they're grown. You know, one is 25.
Oh.
And one is 18, about to graduate from high school and go off.
Okay.
And you know, after that summer in Portland and reading those letters and coming back, I had this really strong experience at one moment of, you know, we were with our kids and the two girls were chasing each other and laughing. They have a great relationship, Debbie and I, sort of hand in hand walking down the hill. And I just felt like, man, how did I get all of this? This is really more than I deserve.
Oh, probably not. Probably just what you deserve. So let me ask you something about, and rather than ask you, as we always do, who gets your love letters today,
yeah.
I think we should just talk more about love letters and your experience with them. You know, found letters are a real treasure. As you said, you got to see something. We always say that found letters just open a door to something you didn't expect.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm seeing that that's true with you. But how did your original cultural realities affect your American love life? You talked about a transition. Is that anything relevant?
Well, you know what's interesting is...
How men are with women, you know?
Well, since I left Afghanistan when I was 16,
mm-hmm.
I will say that I didn't learn much about how men are with women while I was in Afghanistan.
Not from personal experience, but you saw, and that all
yeah.
goes in, yeah.
You know, that somehow reminds me of my uncle and my aunt. He's passed away now. But, you know, Afghanistan is the land of arranged marriages.
Mm.
And my youngest uncle was a guy who, he went off to Switzerland, and I think they were afraid that he was going to meet a foreign woman there and get involved with her.
Mm-hmm.
And so there was some urgency about getting him married off to one of our own before he left. And he did not want to do this, but he didn't have a choice, and the woman that was lined up for him wanted it. But really, what either of them wanted didn't matter. There was a wedding. Everybody had the wedding experience. And he went to Switzerland. He came back, and so then they continued their life.
Mm-hmm.
And I kind of remember him at his wedding day, and how sort of reluctant and unhappy mm. he looked about that. And I can tell you that, you know, at the end of their life, when they were here, this was the most amazingly loving couple
that you can imagine. Yes.
They fell in love after they were together.
And, that's good news.
So I would say that you can't really tell
what the
circumstances will lead to. Which is the way that works and which is the way that doesn't.
Well, isn't some of the arranged marriages is that the families know better than young people
who
they should marry?
There is that. You know, men, especially when you're a young person,
yeah.
you don't exactly have all the criteria you need
right.
to form a relationship. But I was going to say, you asked about love letters and my original culture. And the thing is, letters are not an artifact in that culture in this way, because letters are very rhetorical. There is a formal style in which you write letters. They're not about like pouring out your heartfelt emotions. And that's what letters are to me. You know, that's what I've...
and is that what your books are? I mean, your whole writing life is pouring out your heart in a way that's yours.
Well, you know, of course, this new book, A History of the World Through Islamic Eyes, is not me pouring out my feelings. I hope it's a book based on research pouring out my ideas.
Oh, it is? Okay.
Yeah. So
what is it you want the world to know when you... I mean, this is such a short time we have, really, but is there something you could say about what you want the world to know through you about Islamic life and the world through Islamic eyes?
Well, you know, I think what I all of the stuff that I write about Islam or the Islamic world proceeds from the heartfelt emotion I have that being in that world, I can see that it's a world that's coherent and people have emotions that make sense and they have a worldview that informs their decisions. And being in this world, I know that people have a coherent worldview that informs their decisions. And they're not exactly the same, and they don't understand each other, and mm-hmm. I'm sitting on a fence between the two. I think it's an obligation on my part to try to explain to each side what I see on the other side so that there can be, because, you know, it's true that ultimately we're all people and mm-hmm. it's all the same and we fall in love and our feelings are hurt and, you know, we desire to be respected and all these kinds of emotions are universal.
Well, even desire to reach spiritual heights.
Yeah, the desire to reach spiritual heights and all of these emotions are universal, but if you too quickly say, oh, people are all the same, you know, and that makes you not examine the differences between two groups of people, without even knowing it, what you end up saying is people are all the same and they're all just like me. And that's not really true. You know,
Good
it's like
you
got to get out of yourself and discover that people are having a different experience of the world, and you could put them all together and come to an understanding, but you don't just automatically have it. So that's the mission.
I've always been struck,
it seems
to me, that our differences are our greatest strengths. So, again, that thinking that we're all alike doesn't serve a really good purpose.
Right. You know, translation is a kind of an obsession of mine. I translate, I don't read Farsi poetry very well, but I still read it in mm-hmm. a sort of a crawling fashion, and then I translate it.
Mm-hmm.
Just because, you know, I'm fascinated by the fact that translation is not a transposition of
right.
an English word for
yes.
a Farsi word, an English word for a Farsi word. You don't come up with anything that way. Translation is absorbing a whole kind of understanding that's in one language and then coming over to the other language and reinventing it or reimagining it. And that's what it is with translation.
That's so well said. I'm glad you did. Yeah.
But what strikes me is that all communication is translation that way.
Yes.
So it's a bigger thing.
You have a wonderful anecdote in your book about a poem in Farsi that your father wrote.
Yes.
And you hadn't... You tell it. I can't tell it.
Well, you know, my father was a poet, and one of his... I think in his mind, his major work was this poem that he wrote. And quite often when we intersected in those last years, he would try to give me this poem.
Mm-hmm.
And he would say, you know, Bachim, take a look at this poem. I wrote this. And he gave it to me in Farsi.
Mm-hmm.
And he gave it to me. He gave a tape to me at one point with him reading it. And on another occasion, he gave me his own sort of clumsy English translation of it. So it's clear that he thought a lot of it and he wanted me to, but I couldn't read it and it didn't strike me in any way particularly, and looking at his English translation at one point I cleaned that up, so to speak, and I made a better version of it,
mm-hmm.
and I showed it to him. I said, hey, Daddy, I worked on your poem. I didn't tell him it was his poem. I said, take a look at this.
Uh-huh.
And he said, this is good. You know, Bachim, this reminds me of something I once wrote.
Oh, how nice. Oh, that's the exact story that talks about translation. That's just perfect.
Right. But then, you know, after he died, at that point I had met Afghan guys again, and I was sort of like, in the company, they were my friends, and we hung around together. I'd been talking Farsi more. My relatives had come over, so Farsi was more in my blood now.
Mm-hmm.
And going to his funeral, I had his poem in Farsi with me, and I looked at it on the plane, and I discovered that, whoa, I can read this.
How nice.
You know, I can understand this. So that was pretty
beautiful.
Cool.
And
so
it was marvelous, right?
Do we have time for just to ask, what made your family come over here?
Well, my whole family didn't. You know, each of us mm-hmm. sort of came over.
Oh, is that
and,
right?
And my mother was American, and she had spent 20 years in Afghanistan, and
okay.
then at the end of that time, she felt like that.
And I would have known this if I had read your book,
you,
right?
You would have known
yeah.
that.
You must
okay.
read the book.
Okay.
His entire life story is in this marvelous
okay.
book. I can't even tell you how fabulous it is.
I will
and
get it
today.
It's
not just his life story. It's about insights into Afghanistan in the past, how it is today, the Taliban.
Okay.
It's
I'll
all
get
that
it.
Stuff, yeah.
So now your wife is of a different religion?
She's Jewish.
Uh-huh. And that wasn't a problem to your family, or?
No,
it
wasn't a problem to me. So
right, no, but you were saying that it's the land of arranged marriages, and you don't want your children
Oh, well, my marriage was not arranged because I was a rebel and broke away. And
do I realize that?
Always said, you know, come back to Afghanistan. This is, you want to be a writer, my boy? This is the land of stories. But I turned a deaf ear to that and never went back until much later. So there was no problem with that.
But your brother had an arranged marriage.
He did. He insisted on it. You know, it's like my brother...
Delegate the responsibility of...
Well, no, my brother... had a conversion experience. You know, he was not very much raised Afghan or Muslim, because he was like 7 or 8, I think, when we came here, and he had mostly had contact with Americans, even in Afghanistan. So he grew up, and he was like this totally American guy, and he was at Evergreen State, and he went to Pakistan, and he met the Muslims at the border there, and he, you know, he had the oh blinding light.
Oh, so it meant something to him suddenly.
Yeah, and he became a completely devout, orthodox, zealous Muslim. And in that conversion, he just, you know, when he wanted to get married, he decided that he had to arrange it, and he put the word out to the Muslim brothers, you know, I'm in I'm ready to get married. Anybody know of a candidate? He arranged it himself. So the brothers would say, well, we know of somebody in New Jersey. Would you like to go meet her? And then they'd go, and then the two would be brought into a room, and they'd, they'd have a conversation for half an hour. And
they had an interview.
Basically.
But the choice was his.
So
it was like being fixed up, as we say.
Yeah, it was a blind date.
Right,
with,
blind date after blind date. But the choice.
But it was a blind date that was not tested out with, you know, okay, it looks like we like each other. Let's go out for a while. It wasn't like that. It was like, all right, I think this is going to work. When can you get married?
Oh, so choose and pray.
Huh?
Choose and pray that it'll work out.
Yeah. And, it, you know, in fact, it has worked out. They have a perfectly fine marriage. So.
That's so nice.
You know, it's like, it's amazing how many different ways there are for it to work out. And obviously many ways for it not to. But
Well, and many ways for it not to, even if you've chosen it based on your own passion. And of course, we see that. That's too bad. I wanted to ask something, just in terms of your writing a love letter. Did you ever think of writing a love letter to Lisa and Taya? I mean, just a letter, a letter to them saying thank you for anything and what I saw in the letters and what I see in you now?
Well, you know, I've talked to both of them. They know. I wrote a long letter to Taya, actually, after those letters.
Oh, you did? That's what I'm asking,
And I told her everything I thought and everything I felt. And, you know, it was fine, but...
That's nice that you did that.
Huh?
That's nice that you did that.
Yeah.
We encourage that.
It's a great letter, actually.
I'm sure it is. And you, okay, so you have a copy of it.
Yes, I do.
Yes, and that's important also. We live in a time where that's easy to do, so people should make copies of what you sent.
Well, you know, now we don't write letters enough. Now we write email, and email is very perishable. It just goes away.
Yes, we can retire, Teresa. It also doesn't have your signature, and it hasn't felt the touch of your hand across the paper.
It hasn't, right.
No.
And, you know, when I was in, again, this is in my book. You haven't read it, but I'll just mention this. My drama with my wife, Debbie, my later wife, you know, after 3 or 4 years of being roommates and friends and maybe a year at least of me feeling like, oh, we got to get together, but not finding a way to broach the topic, there was a moment at which I said, okay, either I'm going to break through on this. I had a trip scheduled, and if I break through before I leave, I will come back. If I don't break through,
good for you.
I'll never come back. So we broke through on November 4, which was my birthday. The trip I had planned was to the Islamic world to write about this issue. And November 4 was also the day that the hostages were taken in Iran and the whole Islamic world burst into flames. So I went anyway.
Well, I'm sorry. Tamim, I have to stop here because we're out of time, and I don't want you to tell the whole story of your book, because it's in the book, and I want everyone to read it.
Oh, yeah,
let's
get it from you.
It's west of Kabul, east of New York. Do not miss this book. It's a love story. It's history. It's insight. It's fabulous. And the name of the current new book is, again,
Destiny Disrupted, A History of the World Through Islamic Eyes.
Okay. And if you go to Tamim's website, you'll be able to stay in touch and see what's coming.
Oh.
Thank you, everybody.
Thank you so much, Tamim,
for doing this with us.
So we'll just sign off by saying we encourage you to put your loving thoughts into words and send them while you still have the chance.
Yes. Bye.
So for now, from Janet and Teresa, bye.
Thank you all. Bye.